here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And the first thing I'd like to throw out is tell all our listeners that we're having a webinar. No, actually, it's an on-ground seminar in Clearwater, Florida. And that's coming right up. And I actually have some tickets to go to that. It's a very costly seminar. It offers 12 credits for attendees, medical credits, CMEs. And I'm offering our listeners who attend for no fee as my guest. But you have to get in touch soon because it's coming up in a few days. If you listen to this show after this has passed, that's okay because we have lots of other opportunities. And this also seminar will also be available as an archive. So you can get in touch by going to naturalnurse.com or calling us at 800-829-0918. And we're so happy to have you on board because we know many of you are listeners and you give us great feedback and we like to keep that coming in. So naturalnurse.com contact is a way to get in touch. Today we are very happy to have as our guest Dr. William Davis. Dr. Davis is a preventative cardiologist whose very unique wheat grain-free approach to diet is advocated in the New York Times bestseller, Wheatberry, which you've probably heard of, fantastic book that has changed literally millions of lives. Lose that weight and find your path back to health, along with a series of associated cookbooks and blogs. He is actively engaged in cultivating discussions about heart health, which have yielded solutions to many other diseases as well, because really we're all one body. And a great place to find out more information about Dr. Davis or connect with him is at the wheatbellyblog.com. Also, we'll be discussing Dr. Davis's new book called Undoctored, Why Healthcare Has Failed You and How You Can Become Smarter Than Your Doctor. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, glad to be here.
Dr. William Davis.
Glad to be here.
Oh, good. Are we hearing you?
I hear you fine.
Okay, good. I feel you. Okay. I hear you too. And thank you so much for joining us today. Now, I'd love to know what inspired a cardiologist to discuss how wheat affects health and wellness.
Well, you know, the conventional answers to heart disease are cut your fat, right? Cut your saturated fat and cholesterol, everything in moderation, take a statin drug. Well, I learned years ago it does not work. It hardly has any effect at all. We were tracking people's heart disease very precisely with CT heart scans and watched heart disease progress dramatically, 25 to 30% increase per year. With people going low fat, exercising, taking aspirin and beta blockers and other conventional treatments and statin drugs. We help publish those data. In other words, the conventional solution to heart disease is ridiculous. It does not work at all or has trivial effects. Well, I had all these people who were freaking out on me who had heart disease progressing. These are people without symptoms, people who feel well, are exercising, etc. So we had to devise our own solutions here in Milwaukee because the national advice was, well, just don't scan people. Let them have heart attacks and then worry about it. Let people call you with chest pain. Let them call you to the emergency room with chest pain, ongoing heart attack, and that's when you have to intervene. Well, I think that really rots because my mom died of sudden cardiac death after a successful two-vessel coronary angioplasty. The procedures that
are you saying that she passed away?
Pardon me?
From it? You said she had a cardiac death?
Yes, she died from sudden cardiac death.
Wow.
Just a couple of months after her successful coronary angioplasty. And that's what I was doing. I was doing coronary angioplasty and putting in stents and doing atherectomies, drilling out blockages and those kinds of things. It became clear that the procedural solutions, the conventional solutions like statin drugs, were not just ineffective, but essentially useless. And so what do you do if you don't have solutions for people whose heart disease is progressing silently? Well, this is not my data. This is actually very well sorted out. The most common cause for heart attack, heart disease, etc., is not high cholesterol. It's an excess of small LDL particles. High cholesterol is what I call the kindergarten version of how heart disease is caused. Small LDL particles are flagrantly expressed with people with heart disease. Well, what I asked, what foods cause that? Well, data from the University of California, Berkeley, Hopkins, and many other universities showed that only grains and sugars trigger that pattern. So I asked my patients to remove all grains and limit their sugars, and their small LDL measures would drop from something like 2,000 nanomoles per liter, that's how it's measured, it's a particle count per volume, to zero. In other words, not just a little bit of improvement, not a 10% reduction, not a 25% reduction, obliteration of that abnormality. Oh,
that is so exciting. You know, say, I worked with Dr.
I lose 57 pounds. Why did my rheumatoid arthritis go away? Why did I have no more acid reflux within 5 days? Why did my joint pain, my wrists and elbows disappear in the first week? Why did my seborrheic rash disappear within 5 days? Why did I lose 6 inches off my waist? Why did my triglycerides drop from 400 to 40? Why did my leg edema, leg swelling, go away? Why did my irritable bowel syndrome symptoms disappear within the first week? In other words, people came back to me, dozens, hundreds, thousands, now hundreds of thousands and millions of people come to me and say, my life was transformed simply by removing this thing that we were all told to eat more of. Wheat and grains.
Isn't that amazing? Now, I'm sure you're familiar with Dr. Atkins, who was very popular. Years ago, I actually worked with him. And although his description of the theory was slightly different, he noticed the same outcome, but because his diet was mostly meat and vegetables. So, you know, that eliminated the grain. So although he didn't talk about it in terms of eliminating the grain, you know, it seemed to be counterintuitive, especially at that time. By increasing food that contained cholesterol, but decreasing and eliminating baked goods, wheat, grain, sugars, he got those same results. So, you know, that's happening. It seems to be quite repeatable. Why wouldn't the medical establishment jump on that?
You know, Dr. Atkins was way ahead of his time. He was on the right track. You know, for 1972, when he wrote his first book, he had a lot of the answers right. He didn't have all the answers. You know, it was almost 50 years ago when you think about it. He didn't know about bowel flora like we do. He didn't know about the critical importance of vitamin D restoration. He didn't know about hormonal disruption like thyroid disruption. It's very, very common. He didn't know a lot about fish oil. In other words, we have insights now that really empowers and make the early lessons he learned in the 1970s so much more powerful. But as you know, the medical establishment, healthcare, has nothing to do with health. In fact, I say the worst thing that you can do for healthcare is be healthy. Because if you're healthy, you're useless to the medical system. The medical system is all about generating revenues for its insiders through dispensing drugs and procedures. The medical device industry, the pharmaceutical industry is all about generating revenues, not just a little bit of revenues, but a lot of revenues. So you know what? I'm very grateful for opportunities like your broadcast, because on TV, network TV, cable TV, direct-to-consumer drug ads have become such a dominant force in advertising that TV no longer hosts conversations like this because they're afraid of antagonizing the drug industry and their rich flow of revenues for ads. And so what's happened, in effect, is that Big Pharma has now in control of big media. They control the message and what people hear. And there's so much that people don't hear anymore. Problems in healthcare. They talk about healthcare politics, but not the problems in healthcare. So these kinds of conversations are so crucial now.
Yes, well, even the politics in terms of, you know, a doctor could doctor means teacher, doesn't it? So certainly doctors are actually charged with giving the best information to their patients, which can change over time if they're taught incorrectly and then they, like yourself, have learned the truth. You know, it's not really the doctors that are the problem. I really do think it's the pharmaceutical sales industry.
You know, I think the problems, there's many people here to hold to blame. I think it's the pharmaceutical industry. I think it's the healthcare industry, the hospital industry. It's the medical device industry, which is larger than big pharma. And it, I think it is my colleagues, though, to some degree. You know, just because they, you know, if you have an ophthalmologist who makes $2 million a year by injecting growth factors into people's retinas, but never takes a moment to educate people about better eye health and prevention, you know, that because he loves that flow of money, it's his cocaine. And I do hold him responsible for not educating people. What he should be doing is doing those kinds of injections and paid very richly when he must, but spending time with people and educating them about health, eye health, before they need those kinds of things. But they choose, the gastroenterologist chooses to do only endoscopies and colonoscopies and not engage in real conversations about bowel health. The cardiologist engages in heart catheterizations and dispensing statin drugs, but never stopping for a moment to really talk about the ways to stop heart disease. So I think everyone is to blame in the healthcare system. And it pays very well. You know, when I did those procedures, I made a lot of money doing that. I haven't done that in years now. But that's how the healthcare system works, and I think it's wrong. You know, health is really something we obtain for nearly free. Health is very easy to obtain, but you can't get it from the doctor, ironically. You have to find it on your own. You have to listen to shows like yours, to shared collaborative wisdom online, shared websites now where people collaborate and they find answers on their own. It's a new age, by the way, where we have this incredible capacity for collective effort and finding answers on our own. That's what's happening. The medical system labors away to find better ways to make more money from your misfortune. But people like you and I and your listeners are collaborating to find better answers that don't cost a lot of money and actually work and are safe and natural.
Well, that is true. I completely agree. Now, I know in terms of insurance reimbursement, patients will tell me that they will pay for, let's say, the statin drugs and the new things you see on, like you said, on TV, which then the next, like Xarelto, and the next commercial on TV is from lawyers for Xarelto. You took Xarelto and it messed you up. But the insurance reimbursement will cover that. Well, they may not cover an improved diet.
That's right. So we have a fundamental flaw in healthcare insurance. So if we are incredibly healthy because we had taken a few steps to be healthy, we don't have type 2 diabetes, we're not obese, we don't have high blood pressure, we don't take statin drugs, we don't have acid reflux or autoimmune conditions, we're not prone to dementia like other people. In other words, we're healthy and we did it for almost free. The healthcare insurance industry does not give us a discount. We have to subsidize your next door neighbor who takes Harvoni for hepatitis C at $84,000 for one vial of 120 tablets, or who's prescribed Enbrel at $12,000 a month for their autoimmune condition. And we subsidize that. So one of my goals is to craft a means for healthy people like you and me to opt out of conventional healthcare insurance and healthcare so that we have catastrophic coverage in case of a car accident or tumble down the stairs and bust our hips, but we don't have to subsidize all the people who don't care or don't know or are ignorant and have those conditions and are the unwitting victims of the healthcare industry. We need a way to craft our way a way out of that kind of excessive cost subsidization so that you and I might pay maybe $300 a month for our healthcare insurance for our families and not $1,400, $1,800, and it's going to go up $3,000 a month, $4,000 a month, say for a mother and father and two kids. These are becoming unsustainable costs, and it's a huge wealth transfer from the public into the pockets of big pharma, the healthcare industry, and the medical device industry. Well, I think we should put a stop to it and find ways to opt out of that system.
Well, that is really a good idea. And that may happen in terms of them dropping the mandate where you have to purchase health insurance. But it's just it's not health-based, as you point out so beautifully in your book, Undoctored, Why Healthcare Has Failed You and and How You Can Become Smarter Than Your Doctor. Well, by that, you're talking about gathering your own information and really reading the studies. That really blows me away, Dr. Davis, because I am a fanatic of reading studies. I do it every morning, and it's free. PubMed, you know, you don't have to spend millions of dollars. In fact, it's 100% free. And you can even put in PubMed, also for free, a filter so you get all the stuff you want. Like I get all the reports on natural remedies, let's say, herbal medicine, et cetera. And there's so much data to showing how useful it is with a very low adverse effect profile and a very low cost.
Absolutely. And even beyond the leveled informational playing field where you have access to all the same information that any medical specialist does, we also have this incredible tool called collaboration. And it's booming now online. Let's say you wanted to know, I'm going to make something up. You wanted to know, or a listener of yours wants to know, does turmeric benefit psoriasis? So what they do is they gather online, and this is very easy to do nowadays, maybe 40 or 50 people who agree to take a specific preparation and dose of turmeric, and somehow describe your psoriasis. I have pain and itching on so much of my body surface area, 0 to 5, 0 being none, 5 being terrible. And you grade that at the start, maybe at the end of 60 days. And you all agree to come back after 60 days and grade it again, the severity of your psoriasis. And you do that. And you'll have a quick sense whether there's a real benefit. These kinds of what I call personal clinical trials are being conducted all the time now, and they're generating real data. But people are actually publishing these data. So I'm so hopeful that the real discoveries in health are not going to come from the pharmaceutical industry or the genetics research or the medical device industry or doctors and hospitals. It's going to come from people like you and me and your listeners who take the responsibility and collectively find these new solutions to health. Because you and I are not going to take nasty procedures and drugs. We're going to find natural means of addressing conditions. And people are sharing their solutions that they fall upon kind of by accident. They took maybe ashwagandha for some other reason and noticed that some other problem cleared up. And they shared it online. 25 other people try and say, you know what? I think you're right. It does work. You collectively conduct a personal clinical trial and you prove whether or not this is true. This is the new exciting age of the individual being empowered in health and not being the subject of medical profiteering.
Well, on the other hand, push back to that, and I'd love to hear your feedback on it. And we are talking to Dr. William Davis, who is the author of Wheat Belly. I know you heard about that book because it's a mega bestseller and changed so many people's lives because maybe I was telling them to stop wheat for some reason. Dr. Davis really hit the nail on the head and got to the heart of mainstream America, and they listened to him. And what you're just describing is so amazing, Dr. Davis, because you're talking about the fact that these natural interventions often, not unusually, have a broad-based effect, probably mechanism of bringing down inflammation, on all these different diseases, not just the fact that you might lose weight.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was a type 2 diabetic 25 years ago. When I became a vegetarian, I cut all fats and meats out of my diet. I ate only whole grains and fruits and vegetables, and I jogged 5 to 8 miles a day. I gained 30 pounds. My triglycerides went to 350. My HDL good cholesterol dropped to 27. And I became an overt type 2 diabetic with fasting blood sugars in the 160 range. Well, I'm no longer type 2 diabetic. My blood sugars are perfect. And I've done that with no drugs whatsoever. I've done it with things like no grains, no sugars, vitamin D restoration, fish oil, magnesium, cultivation of bowel flora, a simple menu of strategies that anybody can do and costs almost nothing to do. Certainly almost nothing compared to the kinds of drug costs we're now exposed to, which for many people are thousands of dollars every month.
Isn't that amazing? It actually is. And when you, as a cardiologist, were involved in more mainstream interventions, I think one of the disappointing things for doctors, I would imagine, you see your patients come in, even though that number came down in terms of giving a statin drug, it will lower that cholesterol number. The patient is not healthier. You know, they came in sometimes standing strong, and especially the men, they come in about 6 months, their chest is concave, they're no longer performing sexually, they're losing muscle mass, they're forgetting things. I mean, it actually ages them. even though that number came down. That I think that's a really wrong parameter of health and wellness.
Absolutely. Statin drugs are a crime. You know, what's shocking to me are the shenanigans, the statistical shenanigans performed by the drug industry to sell statin drugs. For instance, you'll hear such things as Lipitor reduces heart attack by 36%. That's not true. That's a flagrant misuse of statistics. Best case scenario, it reduced heart attack risk by 1%, but that doesn't make headlines. And who paid for most of those data? The drug industry paid about $2 billion to generate the data that presumptively support the use of statin drugs. In other words, imagine I'm a car maker and I perform a study that compares my brand of automobile to another brand. And I say, according to studies, my brand of cars are far better than the other brand. But then you ask me, well, who performed that study? I said, well, I did. In other words, it's marketing. It's the science behind statins is a house of cards largely crafted as for marketing. Yet my colleagues have taken that bait, hook, line, and sinker, and think that the science backs up the use of statin drugs, when statin drugs are a miserable solution. And cholesterol is this outdated, awful, crude marker for heart disease risk. There are far better markers like that lipoprotein test we talked about earlier, and such things as thyroid dysfunction, vitamin D deficiency. These are far more powerful markers. When I added vitamin D, by the way, to the regimen to stop heart disease, the progression of heart disease, it was the first time I saw day in, day out, dramatic reversal of heart disease. We would take a heart scan score, for instance, a high score, normal is zero, maybe 900. And 6 months later, they'd come back with a score of 400 or something like that. In other words, the first time I saw not just slowing of progression, but actual reversal of heart disease. And the need for procedures. I was doing many procedures every day, 5, 6, 7 days a week, morning till night, went to zero. Nobody needed procedures, except the people who didn't want to do these kinds of things. People who said, screw this, I'm not doing it. The people who said, I'm going to try it.
Yeah, that's right. That's an important point. That's an important point. You can give advice. So you are going back into the Latin use of the word doctor is teacher. You can't make anyone change their diet. So they have to want to make the changes that you're, you know, advising them to do.
Exactly. You know, your listeners are the kinds of people you want to talk to, people who make the effort, make a special effort, rather than just watching a game show on TV. They're listening to you in a health conversation. So people who actually engage in these kinds of things, like eating no grains, no sugars, some exercise, it doesn't have to be triathlons, just simple exercise like walking, fish oil, vitamin D, iodine, getting your thyroid in order, cultivating bowel flora, a little bit complicated, but not that bad. Magnesium, a very simple menu of things, and several hundred health conditions recede, and women can fit back over time into a size 4 or size 6 dress. In other words, it's very easy. The problem is the U.S. Dietary Guidelines for Americans, the USDA, the American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics all agree you should eat a diet that causes type 2 diabetes or contributes to it, causes obesity, causes autoimmune diseases, causes you to feel awful, and causes hundreds of other diseases, and let the medical system come to your rescue. That's the current paradigm we operate under.
Well, yeah, I think unfortunately you're right. I have seen, for instance, on the American Diabetic Association, they have a diet called the DASH diet. And although it's not grain-free, it is based on whole foods. So that, I think, is a good step in the right direction.
You know, you'll see this over and over and over again in nutritional thinking. If something is proven to be less bad than something else, it must therefore be good, may even be the ideal. So the analogy I use is, imagine unfiltered full tar cigarettes are recognized as terrible. They cause heart disease and lung cancer. And we do a study to see whether low tar filtered cigarettes are less harmful. And let's say we see a modest improvement, maybe a 15% reduction in lung cancer and cardiovascular disease. By the logic of nutrition, you and I would conclude that filtered low tar cigarettes are therefore good for you. And we should smoke lots of low tar filtered cigarettes. Of course,
well, that's a great example. That is a great example.
You'll see this over and over and over again in nutritional thinking. The Mediterranean diet is less harmful than the conventional American diet. The Mediterranean diet must therefore be the ideal diet, which is, of course, ridiculous. You'll see this over and over and over again, even though the data already exists to show us what an ideal diet should look like.
So that's excellent. Now, I know you also wrote cookbooks, so we're going to talk about that as well. Right now, we're going to go to a break. Listen to the Natural Medicine Chest that Dr. Zamperone and I put together just for added information on holistic medicine and how to take care of yourself and the science. And when we come back, we are going to continue our discussion with our wonderful guest today, Dr. William Davis, MD, author of Wheat Belly and his new book, Undoctored, Why Healthcare Has Failed You and How You Can Become Smarter Than Your Doctor. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as cats, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diets. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
going to naturalnurse.com. You can email us there, tell us what you like, what you don't like, and also we always have all of our shows posted. If you missed it today or you want to hear it again, catch all this wisdom from Dr. William Davis, MD, you can visit our archives, and I will also send Dr. Davis a link to our archive so he can post it on his site as well. Is the best place to get in touch with you, Dr. Davis, wheatbellyblog.com?
Yeah, there's lots of conversations there. There's also a Wheat Belly Facebook page. There's also a Facebook page to support people just starting out called Wheat Belly 10-Day Grain Detox. And there's also a lot of activity on the Undoctored blog and Undoctored Facebook page. So depending where people want to start.
Oh, excellent. So you can be found. Now, when you're giving out nutrition advice, which I think is very appropriate for any cardiologist, and not just say, like you said, oh, low fat, which means nothing, and it actually increases heart disease, what happens to the emotional life of someone who's eaten a bagel every day? How do you help them?
You know, that's a great question, because grains, the dangers of grains first came to attention because of psychiatric implications. It first came to attention because people who stopped eating grains saw a dramatic drop in schizophrenia, of all things, particularly the paranoia and the hearing voices, the auditory hallucinations of paranoid schizophrenics. And that's where a lot of conversation about the psychological, psychiatric implications of grain consumption. We now know, for instance, that kids with ADHD and autism have a dramatic increase in behavioral outbursts with grain consumption. We know that people with schizophrenia have more paranoia and hear more voices and are socially more disengaged when they eat grains. We know that people with bulimia and binge eating disorder have 24-hour-a-day food obsessions, the kind of obsessions that make them sit in front of a refrigerator at 3 o'clock in the morning and binge. That's all triggered by grain consumption. Depression in people who are genetically prone can be triggered by grain consumption. The mania of bipolar illness is triggered by grain consumption. And in you and me who don't have those conditions, and appetite stimulation. People who consume grains take in on average 400 to 800 calories more per day every day and tend to be plagued by incessant appetite. That's from a protein called gliadin in wheat and related grains. Gliadin-derived opioid peptides, opiates, that bind to the opiate receptors of the human brain and trigger incessant appetite. The wonderful thing about this is when you stop grains, well, first of all, you go through an opiate withdrawal syndrome that lasts about a week, nausea, headache, and fatigue, and depression. But then you are magnificently free from all those problems. And people say this, I'm not hungry anymore. In fact, I get up in the morning, I don't really feel like eating till about 2 p.m. Or I have a nice big breakfast, 3 eggs and bacon, and I'm not hungry till dinner time. Or something I've done many times, I'll have a nice breakfast, maybe a lunch, and then it's 9 o'clock at night. I realize I forgot to eat dinner. In other words, this habit that people have developed of having to eat many times every day, even between meals, all goes away. You almost become indifferent to food.
Yeah, because so much of what you're talking about is reflexive eating and, I think, addiction. And, you know, a lot of it does turn into sugar and alcohol.
Absolutely. So many addictive behaviors, so many, people live in shame because they can't tell other people that they're always hungry, that when they dump their children's leftovers into the garbage, they're secretly eating them. And those kinds of crazy behaviors, all that goes away with elimination of grains. It sounds crazy, I know. One of the things that it's important for listeners to understand is that grains are seeds of grasses, just like the grass you cut in the summertime in your lawn. But, you know, just as you can't save the clippings from cutting your grass and toss them on top of a salad because you'd get sick if you ate them and they'd come out undigested, so any other component of grasses are indigestible or only at best partially digestible. And so multiple proteins in particular in the seeds of grasses and grains are indigestible. And that's why they do such things as trigger inflammation and gastrointestinal toxicity. and all kinds of mind effects, because the fragments from partial digestion or the fully intact pieces have very, very bad effects on humans who consume these kinds of things. So grasses were never meant for human consumption. You know, humans have only consumed the seeds of grasses for less than 0.5% of our time on Earth. It was a very recent mistake we made.
How did that happen? It's not that recent. You know, everybody could think back to their grandparents, and many cultures have also eaten different grains.
So while humans were hunters, we killed animals, we ate their hearts, livers, and brains, and meat, and we caught fish and shellfish, and we dug in the dirt for underground roots and tubers, we ate seasonal fruit, we ate berries, etc. The things that we all instinctively regard as food. If you hadn't eaten anything in 2 weeks and you had to go out into the forest, you would know what to eat. You'd kill something first, and then you'd find some leaves or some berries to eat. Nuts, perhaps. But about 12,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, there was a period of change in climate, and food fell in short supply in some parts of the world. And humans, in desperation, turned to the seeds of grasses, like einkorn wheat, the ancestral form of wheat in the Fertile Crescent, or millet in sub-Saharan Africa, or quinoa and maize in Central America, or rice in the swamps of Southeast Asia. And we all turned to the seeds of grasses. By the way, what happened to those primitive people who first turned to the seeds of grasses after 2.5 million years of not consuming seeds of grasses? We developed explosive tooth decay. Here's an interesting fact.
Oh, what is the connection there? That's amazing, isn't it?
Wow. Yeah. Before humans consumed seeds of grasses, 1-3% of all teeth showed tooth decay or evidence of abscess or misalignment. When we added grains, 16-49% of all teeth showed decay, abscess, misalignment. In other words, before we even had toothpaste, fluoridated toothpaste, toothbrushes, dental floss, dentists, or orthodontists, we had almost no tooth decay. It was only when we added grains that tooth decay exploded, as did knee arthritis exploded, iron deficiency, and numerous other diseases. In other words, we ate the seeds of grasses in desperation to stay alive, which is understandable. We didn't realize there's a chronic health price to pay. You know, we see this over and over again in primitive cultures, the few that persist nowadays, like the Matsas in Peru, or the Maasai, or the Hadza in Tanzania. When they're exposed to our foods, they develop arthritis, colon cancer, type 2 diabetes, obesity, hypertension, psychiatric disease, rashes. In other words, all the modern so-called diseases of civilization. Well, I think there's an important lesson in that. If these people are essentially free of all those common diseases like colon cancer and type 2 diabetes and heart disease, why don't we mimic that behavior? They have other problems. They have worm infestations and malaria. They have infections and injury. But they don't have our chronic diseases. So there's a very, very important observation in that.
That's so true, Dr. Davis, and you're listening right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and our guest today is Dr. William Davis, very famous author of Wheat Belly. I know you've heard of Wheat Belly, and then he also now has a book with a real political tone, Undoctored, Why Healthcare Has Failed You and How You Can Become Smarter Than Your Doctor. And you also have a lot of wonderful recipes and recipe guides for people, Dr. Davis, because it is emotionally challenging sometimes to change your diet. But once you realize how much better you feel, and like you said, once you get over that first week or two of really what happens is the microorganisms that you're feeding with a high sugar, high grain diet. And we are finding out, which I'm lecturing about at a gut-brain conference next week, actually this week on Saturday, where we know that those microorganisms can actually release chemical messengers that fit into receptor sites in the human brain that cause you to crave those carbs. So you're like a robot going around working for the microbes.
Absolutely. I'm glad you bring that up. Yes, the microbiome, the bowel flora, is such a crucial thing in human health. And the lessons, we're only starting to learn the lessons, but I'm already seeing dramatic improvements in people's health just by taking a handful of very simple steps to cultivate healthy bowel flora, because it's clear as modern people, we've all screwed up our bowel flora because we've taken antibiotics intermittently. We have antibiotic residues in our dairy and other foods. We have herbicides and pesticide residues in our foods. We have chlorinated drinking water. We are exposed to a sea of things that have screwed up our bowel flora. Now, nobody really knows what truly healthy bowel flora looks like, but it certainly does not look like what we have. But there are steps people can take to cultivate healthy bowel flora. And as you say, yield the species that produce metabolites that reduce blood sugar for you and reduce blood pressure, reduce insulin, facilitate weight loss, make you happier, reduce anxiety, increase the duration of REM sleep, make sleep more restorative and restful, make more vivid dreams like the dreams we had as kids where we fly and those kinds of things. So bowel flora, I agree, is incredibly critical to people's health.
And also, I think people sometimes are, let's say, recognize that they need to go through those few days of discomfort. It's not danger, like when you start a new pharmaceutical, which might influence a symptom, but you might die from it. So stopping eating high-carb, wheat-filled diet might be threatening emotionally, but there's zero negative side effect to doing it.
That's very, very important for your listeners to recognize, because people will say this sometimes. I tried to go wheat-free or grain-free, pardon me, and I felt awful. I was nauseated. I was depressed. I had suicidal thoughts. And so it must be my body telling me I need wheat, which, of course, is not true. It's no different than the alcoholic who drinks 2/5 of vodka a day, who wants to be free of that. They're going to go through some pretty darn tumultuous week or so of withdrawal to get off of this stuff. But it's the process you have to go through. And as you point out, everybody survives. No one has ever succumbed to grain elimination or grain withdrawal. So it's a necessary process. Interestingly, people who do this find that the withdrawal process, the withdrawal and detoxification process, ends abruptly. They can actually tell you, oh, yeah, it was 2:33 p.m. on Tuesday.
How many days do you think that lasts? Because I see like 3 to 5 for most clients.
Days?
That they really lose that, you know, super urge, like they're missing something if they're not eating lots of sugar-forming carbs.
Yes, it's about 3 to 5 days in the majority. Occasionally longer, 7 days, rarely much longer than that. I've seen it go up to 3 weeks, but that's very, very uncommon. But it can be very unpleasant. In my practice, I've had people actually sobbing in my office because they knew how they would feel when they did this. But it's a necessary process. The wonderful thing is once you do this and get through it successfully and recognize it's a withdrawal process, you come out of this feeling miraculously better. You feel wonderful. You're freed from hunger. You have the start of so many improvements in health, like freedom from joint pain and acid reflux and IBS symptoms. And so it's just a necessary process. People often ask, is there a way to not have it? I don't know of a way to not have it. There are things you can do to soften the blow. I talk about these in the Wheat Belly books.
Well, yeah,
you have to
definitely
hydrate more.
For instance, yeah, I have found also making what's called the Master Cleanse and drinking that a lot throughout the day, which is simply water with lemon juice squeezed in and a little bit of cayenne pepper and perhaps a drop of grade B maple syrup, and that just takes them through with very little discomfort.
Excellent. Yeah. Salting their food, not exercising, because exercise makes you feel awful during this period. Get a massage, watch a funny movie, anything you can think of to just get through this process. And so it is doable for the majority of people. Rarely can somebody say, I can't do it. Some people really, really do have terrible addictions, and they have to be counseled through it. But the vast majority of people can do this very successfully and rediscover health, or the start of health, when they do this.
Yeah, that is so exciting. A doctor talking about rediscovering health. Shouldn't we all be hearing that? Let's focus on your book. When we come back, we're going to take another little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we're going to let you hear about some other shows here on Progressive Radio Network. I love being part of Progressive Radio Network for many reasons, because you hear shows like The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z and a large variety of tons of truth And of course, if you notice, there's no commercials. So there's no drug company pulling our strings or paying our bills for that matter. So you can always donate to the station as well so we can continue to bring you this information. And of course, all of our hosts and guests, this is not paid advertising. We're all doing it as a volunteer, as is Dr. William Davis, talking about his work. And so it's a very different perspective than when there's commercial pursuits involved. Also, all the shows are archived, so if 10 a.m. on Tuesday is not a good time for you, you can listen to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z 4 in the morning or Saturday and Sunday, anytime you want, and that's true with all the shows. So we're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Undoctored with Dr. William Davis. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
Hi, I'm David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myths, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.fm. I love science the way it should be practiced, but a lot of modern science is corrupted by financial interests and serves a master other than the public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics. If you're new to the show, check out our past episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com.
Love, lust, and laughter, Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, a board-certified sex therapist and a marriage and family therapist. Guests, colleagues, authors are interviewed, and we sometimes dispense advice to create a format that is both informative and entertaining. If you can't listen live, go to the archives and even rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope that you are coming with us.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from progressive voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
Happy to have you on board with us today, listening to our show with Dr. William Davis, medical doctor, author of Wheat Belly, which you, I'm sure, have heard of. And now we're going to focus on his newest book called Undoctored, Why Healthcare Has Failed You and How You Can Become Smarter Than Your Doctor. So thank you so much for writing this book. It is really, I would say, deeply probably offensive to many people who are healthcare providers.
Good.
Right. That was the point, right?
That's right. You know, I fear so many people, because you and I are in healthcare, but so many people in conventional healthcare. So I'm not talking about people who are in integrative health or functional medicine. I'm talking about mainstream healthcare, the kind that you see on TV with the drug ads and the doctors in hospitals. They've lost sight of their mission. They've forgotten that their business, their day-to-day business should be all about teaching people how to be healthy, helping them find the ways to get better health. It shouldn't be about scheduling another heart catheterization or MRI or upper endoscopy or some other revenue-generating procedure and telling people, shut up, just take this prescription. I'm the doctor. You're the patient. I know better. I'm the one who went to medical school. You've heard all these kinds of things your listeners have. And they've forgotten that the interaction should all be about health, but health doesn't pay. That's the terrible irony of modern healthcare. helping people be healthy doesn't pay the doctor, doesn't pay the drug industry, doesn't pay the medical device industry, doesn't benefit the hospital. That's why it's so important that people do such things, listen to your show, read books like Undoctored, and have their eyes open to the fact that health is almost free.
Well, because if you take care of yourself, you know, then like you said, things can happen. Emergency medicine is the highest level intervention, I think, if you've been in a car accident, although I would add in as standard of practice using homeopathic arnica since it works, along with all the true excellent emergency interventions.
So there's a time and place for those kinds of things. If I am in a car accident and I break my hip or have a fractured arm, you know, the healthcare system is pretty good at administering those, though I often come out with a lot of new problems, right? It's typical when people come out of the hospital newly diabetic because of the diet they were fed in the hospital, or with dysbiosis, disruption of bowel flora because of the antibiotics they were given. So the hospital is a very dangerous place, but it also does some good. The problem is that people who are not in the hospital, someone diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, who's prescribed metformin, Januvia, and Toujeo, thousands of dollars per year worth of drugs, on average $10,000 per year. None of that restores health. All of it has bad side effects that magnify health problems. That's the current paradigm of health. We treat you with things that cause even bigger problems, like acid reflux drugs are not as benign as people think they are. They cause osteoporosis. They increase your risk of infection. They cause dysbiosis and amplify risk for autoimmune diseases and colon cancer. In other words, the presumed solutions dispensed by the doctor are not solutions. They're near-term band-aids for this or that problem, but they impair health in dramatic ways, like the statin drugs you're talking about. I've lost track of the number of people who said, something happened. I feel like I've aged 20 years in the past 3 months, and I don't know why. I have a hard time getting in and out of the car. My muscles hurt. I'm tired all the time. My blood sugar went up, and I'm pre-diabetic now, even though I wasn't before. That's the statin drug at work. So this idea that these drugs are solutions to anything is a fiction. You know, if the doctor told you, I think we need to use this drug despite the downsides, here are the downsides. If they told you, perhaps that would be justifiable. But often the doctor doesn't even know that beta blockers cause weight gain. For instance, beta blockers like metoprolol or carvedilol, they cause weight gain, blood sugar. The risk of type 2 diabetes goes up by 30% just with the prescription of a beta blocker or a diuretic like hydrochlorothiazide. So the doctors have not been honest with us either. They've been telling us these are necessary, these are good for us, and they're not. They're horrible.
Yeah, and they actually, like you said, overall do a measurable change, but make you more ill rather than more healthy. And it's amazing to me, you as a cardiologist really point this out to your patients, and someone who's a gastroenterologist, they won't even talk about food. That's like just amazing. The names of the chapters in your book, Undoctored, are just very provocative and make you want to read them. Like, I love the chapters called Wild, Naked, and Unwashed. What's that about? That'll make anybody feel better, for sure.
You know, I classify health strategies into two general categories. Things that serve an intrinsic human need, that is something that's developed over millions of years of adaptation to life on this planet. And then things that are really not necessary to our intrinsic human needs. If your listeners understand that basic difference, they'll understand so much about health. So it explains why, for instance, eliminating grains is so powerful, because humans are not adapted to consuming grains and develop all these health problems by consuming them. Vitamin D. We're not supposed to be sitting inside, wearing clothes, working in an office. We're supposed to be running outdoors, barely wearing any clothes, lots of surface area in a tropical or subtropical climate, and eating lots of liver that has vitamin D in it. We're supposed to consume the organs and brains of animals that are rich in omega-3 fatty acids, as well as seafood. But nobody in the modern world wants to do that anymore, and it's kind of dangerous to do so with modern livestock. So we have to take fish oil. But in other words, it's those, that small collection of very, very powerful strategies all serve intrinsic human need. If I had scurvy, for instance, and my joints deteriorate and I have big open sores on my body, the solution is not a good plastic surgeon or a prosthetic hip. The solution is vitamin C. And ashwagandha is not going to serve that need. Turmeric is not going to serve that need. It has to be vitamin C. So when there's an intrinsic human need that needs to be served, filling that need is dramatic. But it also means that such things as, let's say, I don't mean to pick on any particular supplement, but something like ashwagandha can be helpful, but it does not serve any intrinsic human need. So your expectation for something like that outside of human intrinsic need should be very low, very small. My point in all this is if you address those things that serve intrinsic human need, you'll have success and results that far exceed your expectations.
Isn't that great? Because like you said several times on our show, as soon as you take the reins and become your advocate for your health and wellness and decide you're an adult, and if you are a parent, the same thing for your child, in terms of what you're putting in your body, like you would choose the right gas for your car, you experience differences in the thing that you're trying to work on, like move a number somewhere. And then the other effects, we might call them side effects, are positive. Like you said, the psoriasis begins to clear up. I love that one because it's so visual and people can just see it happening. Those scaly bumps, they sort of go down to be flat, little red areas, and then you see the perimeter of them shrinking in such a short time, even when people have had it for 20 years.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Psoriasis is easy to reverse in the majority of people, but it's the same condition that generates prescriptions for drugs that cost up to $20,000 per month. So which one does the doctor and the pharmaceutical industry choose? The path that you and I follow, which costs almost nothing, or the path that generates huge amounts of revenue for their insiders? You can see the problem here.
That's right. Well, that's what it's all about and always has been. You know, even looking back in history, a lot of the witch hunts were about that to begin with because people were getting good results with herbs. And the pharmaceutical industry was actually involved at that time, not to the point that it is now, but they really wanted to downgrade the belief in the use of natural products. That's been an ongoing issue, just like they took away naturopathic licensing from many states, which was the norm really not that long ago in the late 1900s.
Yes, I hope for a resurgence. You know, I'm in some ways, believe it or not, grateful for direct-to-consumer drug ads because it puts in front of everybody just how profit-driven the drug industry is, just how horrible when they had to list all those side effects, how horrible a lot of these agents are, and what pansies my colleagues have become for prescribing such garbage. And so I'm almost grateful for what they've done because it's putting front and center the problems that healthcare is generating, including the drug industry.
Yeah, those commercials are amazing. How could you listen to that and even want to take it? Of course, they try to override it with the visuals of people dancing through the field and falling in love, you know, while their liver is being destroyed and, you know, they're having heart attacks and dying if you listen to the background description. So I hope the law stays in place requiring them to make those disclosures.
Or even better, someday the legislation to ban direct-to-consumer drug ads finally goes through. You know, the two countries on the planet that have the highest healthcare costs are the U.S. and New Zealand, the only two countries that allow direct-to-consumer drug advertising.
Wow,
in other words, it drives revenues for the drug industry, but it also increases your costs without an accompanying improvement in health, by the way.
Well, unfortunately, Dr. Davis, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being our guest, and thank you so much, listeners. So just one more time, how can people find you, Dr. Davis? I know it's not hard. Just Google your name.
If they just Google anything associated with my books like Wheat Belly or Undoctored, they'll find the Wheat Belly blog, Undoctored blog, and the Facebook pages for either of those. And those are great ways to start joining this conversation.
Well, thank you so much and have a wonderful day and a wonderful week. And thank you, listeners. We love to hear from you. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.